listening to the Godfather and Gorney podcast on Rivals.com with your hosts, the Godfather of Recruiting, Mike Farrell, and National Recruiting Analyst, Adam Gorney.
That's right. It's another episode of the Godfather and Gorney podcast here on Rivals.com. This is 2 in 1 week. Everybody, there was such high demand. Everybody was asking for more Godfather and Gorney. So we're giving it to you, Mike Farrell and Adam Gorney. Guys, let's jump right into it. There's a few topics we want to cover. A few things that came up over the during the week after we recorded our earlier podcast. Let's start with Byron Coward transferring out of Auburn. Mike, what do you think about that? We know, you know, when he was recruited, he was deciding between Auburn and Florida. What do you think has gone on there that brings this with him transferring?
I think this is one of those things where it's very hard to scout the emotional and mental aspect of football. I think he wasn't an entitled kid going through the process. He certainly wasn't a kid who thought he was the greatest. He was always working hard to try to show and prove he was greatest. And I remember him working on pass rushing moves in the hallway, at midnight at our 5-star challenge, just always thinking about being number one and staying number one. He had a great Under Armour week. I think he got to Auburn and the guy he wanted to play for isn't there anymore. And I think he just wasn't able to handle it as far as the expectations that come with being number one. I remember, you know, I don't talk to kids after they're done unless they talk to me, you know. So after they sign and they go off on their college or NFL career, it's not like I'm hitting them up for, you know, to chat or whatever. Cowart hit me up, I think it was right midway through his sophomore year or whatever. It was last year. And he was asking me where he should transfer to because he didn't want to be a bust. He was so afraid of being a bust and labeled a bust and all. And of course I didn't answer because we don't get involved in any of that stuff. But it was very telling to me that he was asking, you know, a guy barely knows where he should transfer to and how scared he was of becoming a bust. So I think that plays into it.
Yeah, I don't think this is a talent issue. I think this is either motivation or, you know, he was a kid who could get in his own head a little bit and worry about, you know, things off the field. And so I'm hopeful when he transfers, he sees it as a fresh start and really can produce because, you know, he is a very talented defensive end, one of the best we've seen in a long time. And it was kind of odd for years at Auburn. He really didn't do a thing and really didn't make an impact at all. So, you know, maybe transferring, you know, I'm not a huge fan of kids transferring all the time, but maybe this transfer will give him kind of a fresh start somewhere and he could start really producing and looking like the NFL defensive end we thought he would become at Auburn.
Somewhere. We all know where he's going to go. It's FA. Yeah.
Well, where does he go? Florida?
FAU, baby. FAU. Florida's not going to touch him. They're just not. Like, I don't think he's going to be a hot commodity out there. You know, I do think Lane Kiffin's reclamation project is a good fit, and I think that's where he'll end up. Now, I don't have any inside information. I'm just guessing based on every other 4- and 5-star that's either busted out or had trouble over the last year.
Well, let's hope he's listening right now because, you know, kids, don't ask Mike Farrell for advice. He just won't
I
get
won't
back
even
to
answer
you.
I will not respond to you at all.
But now...
If you're asking Mike Farrell for advice, you're really in trouble.
Well, that's the thing, too. It's so funny on these message boards. You're telling kids where to go. You're pushing kids to certain schools, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, if any idiot out there is going to listen to me, even if I told them where to go to school, then they got bigger problems. Because if you're listening to some stranger, you know, telling you where to go to school, and that goes for anybody in this industry, you're really doing a disservice to yourself. So I will not respond. I always tell them, listen, we've got a code of ethics and we can't get involved in the recruiting process. I've been asked many, many times where I should go to school or who would you pick or whatever. The answer is always the same. We have a code of ethics. In this case, since he was already a college student and we're not supposed to contact those and, you know, have a conversation with those guys without going through his sports information, I just ignored him. That may seem cold, but listen, I'm cold.
Well, something we're well aware of, but no, just kidding. But that takes us into our next topic. You, Mike, you put out an article earlier this week on Rivals.com talking about the biggest busts in the history of our rankings. And it, you know, we should mention that it wasn't just us that had Byron number one. It was just about every recruiting service out there had him at the top. But talk about that article. You know, guys that you felt you put on there: Ronald Powell, Bryce Brown, and guys who maybe were almost on that list.
Yeah, and it's still on Rivals if you want to check it out. And again, you know, people are like, "Well, bust. You can't call, you know, such and such a bust," especially, you know, Derek Williams, who had a very solid career at Penn State. You can't fit in a headline all-time number one guys who played well but didn't quite play well enough to be number one in the country but really still had okay careers and got drafted anyways. I mean, come on, people. It just doesn't work that way. So bust is a little bit harsh. I think, you know, it's maybe a little early for Cowart and Hand, and we'll talk about that in a second. Bryce Brown was a bust. It just the way it is. He barely had a college career. Now he got obviously had a 1 year pretty good stint in the NFL. He's still bouncing around probably, but you know, he was a guy who was everybody thought was going to be great, had an opportunity to be great, and didn't pan out. Ronald Powell was injuries. I mean, he had two severe knee injuries, and Hand is on there. And then Derek Williams was the one that a lot of people took exception to. You know, and then they're like, well, why don't you do a top four? Well, no, you kind of do 5, 10. It's one of those round number things. So we picked a fifth guy. I thought about Dorial Green Beckham because he didn't have a great career, obviously, at Missouri. And then, you know, he got caught doing whatever in front of the stadium and then transferred to Oklahoma and never played. But he had a better NFL career. So when it came to the tiebreaker, you know, between Derek Williams and DGB, I went with the NFL stuff. And I see Jimmy Clausen has been put up on our board as well. And, you know, I don't think he was a bust. I thought he had a solid career. He was a second-round draft pick. And, you know, that doesn't qualify to me as a bust. And if you saw that offensive line that he was working with for the 3 years he was at Notre Dame, I mean, he was running for his life every second. So I never thought of him. It was DGB or Derek Williams.
Yeah, DGB in high school. Remember him? He was so physically talented, but had a real tough time catching the ball. And we thought he would kind of learn that and kind of grow into his frame a little bit. And he did. I mean, it was off the field stuff that detracted him. But you know, as we look at rankings, Mike, and we should really always do this. We've had a lot of great number twos, and number ones have kind of busted out a little bit more. But you know, Cowart and Hand, I'm interested to see what Deshaun Hand's future holds, because that kid is insanely talented. I mean, if you're Rashawn Gary is definitely not a bust at all. He's a definite hit, and Hand is almost just as talented as him. For him to struggle at Alabama, and you know, we've talked about this before. You could have one good year at Alabama, you've seen it before, and be a first round NFL draft pick, but I'm not entirely sure that's Deshaun Hand's future right now.
No, well, it could be, but you know what? I mean, it's the last chance, and we're, what, you know, 3 games into the season. And so, you know, he had to be up there because, you know, he may very well be drafted in the second round. You know, I mean, guys who I thought had fairly disappointing careers that were ranked number one by us or elsewhere, like DGB, you know, Mario Edwards, guys like that got drafted very high. And, you know, so I think the talent is always there, and there's always the intrigue of taking that talent, and maybe they couldn't do what they needed to do at the college level, but we'll get them in the NFL and we'll turn them into great players and all that stuff. But I don't know. The number two thing is very interesting. Not as big a problem earlier. Here's what happened. Okay. And I'll take full blame for this. 2011 came around. Jadeveon Clowney was a freak of nature. Best player I've ever seen in high school in person, best defensive end I've ever scouted. I went a little defensive end nuts. You know, now again, DGB was 2012. He was wide receiver, but you know, then it was Kim Dichie. And remember that whole year we weren't 100% sold on Kim Dichie, but no one else took over. You know, Carl Lawson came close, but he was 6'2", a little sawed off, blah, blah, blah. Then my defensive end, you know, craze started a little bit more. And then we had Hand, you know, but then we had Myles Garrett also at number two. So had we flipped those, we'd look like geniuses. And then you got Cowart and we had Rosen as number one heading into Under Armour week. Rosen blows off Under Armour, as is Josh Rosen, you know, the perfect Josh Rosen move. Cowart dominates the week, has a great game. We flip him back, and now we're kicking ourselves. So, you know, maybe I put too many cards in the whole defensive end side of the table and went all in on that. And I'm learning from my mistakes, everybody.
Wow. That's something it's you don't gross. Hear often.
That's a step in the right
it's
direction.
It's called maturity, Mike. Gorney. Try to get some of it, Dan, you know?
Right.
Well, speaking of mistakes or you know, people thinking of a mistake, let's move on to James Franklin calling that timeout at the end of the game. They're up 56-0. Who did they even play? I don't even
Georgia know. State.
Oh, yeah, Georgia State. So comes out to kick a field goal, and he calls a timeout. A lot of people think he was icing the kicker. Some people were real upset about it. What do you
I'll
guys
let you
think?
Go first, Gorney, because you're the Penn State grad.
I don't have a problem with it. Franklin's explanation was that, you know, they had their fourth team field goal block on and guys were in the wrong positions and all that kind of stuff. But I don't have a problem with it. But what I do have to say about it is that it is certainly a culture change at Penn State, and Penn State fans are a group that like, you know, a certain way of playing football and not blowing teams out and not embarrassing teams when you're up 56-0 in the fourth quarter. It was sort of, you know, talked about for years when Paterno would just win games 13-7, 20-14, and Bobby Bowden was down at Florida State, you know, putting tons of numbers on teams, and Penn State fans kind of turned their nose up at that and said that, you know, he was unnecessarily embarrassing teams. So I don't have a problem with it. You know, if you want to go out and, you know, kill teams as much as you can and call timeouts at 56-0 and do those kinds of things, you're setting an example and you're having a kind of a culture change at Penn State. But that is something, you know, Penn State fans hated James Franklin until they loved him and when they took him to the Rose Bowl last year. So it is something that has definitely been different. I don't think it would have happened in the last 60 years or so of Penn State football, but I don't have a problem with it because it's telling kids that expectations are very high and you have to go out and perform every single play of the game. And so I'm fine with it. It probably wasn't the best look when it was happening or afterward. And that's why he got so many questions about it and had to defend himself. And it was kind of a national story, but you know, he's setting kind of a you know, a cultural statement there in terms of what they want inside the program. And you know, that's kind of the expectation now that they're going to play with perfection.
I loved it. Now, you know, if I was covering the game or, you know, sitting there for 4 hours, which, you know, every college football game lasts 4 hours with 1,000 reviews about this, that, and the other, and commercial timeouts and all this other stuff, I would have been like, come on, there's 11 seconds left. Just no, stop. But I loved it. One of my favorite expressions, and I can't cuss on this show, but I think I can use the word crap. So, Gordon Ramsay, a big Gordon Ramsay, you know, Kitchen Nightmares, you know, Hell's Kitchen, you name it. He said in One Kitchen Nightmares that somebody was crapping on someone else from a great height. And he didn't use the word crap, but it was a great expression, and I'm going to start using it often with a British accent. And that is what James Franklin did, and I'm okay with it because here's the deal. They got a shutout. Let's say it comes down to, you know, who's going to make the playoff. And you know, Penn State, a lot of people think Penn State got screwed last year. A lot of people think a couple years ago, Baylor, TCU got screwed. Run it up. Get as many shutouts as possible. Do whatever you have to do to build that resume because you never know. Let's say they have 12 games this season, and let's say they have 5 shutouts, which is, you know, obviously quite a lot. That looks better than 4 shutouts. So now they've got a 56-0 shutout over an overmatched team that nobody cares about, but it doesn't matter. It's on the resume. So, you know, listen, it just crap on them from a great height, and I'm done talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing. Is like all these people whining about it, it's you're right. That it comes at the end of the year, he's thinking long term. It comes down to, you know, you have to split hairs when you're deciding between teams that make the playoffs sometimes. And so you got to think about that. Maybe he was also, he wanted a certain coaching situation where he wanted to teach his kids, you know, to do a certain thing a certain way at that point in the game. Whatever, that's his job, and he's there to win games, and that's what he's paid to do. Because if he loses games, he gets fired.
Dave, before you go, Gorney, can you please repeat what I said, Dave Barry?
What do you mean?
I want to hear my phrase.
What, you crap on them from a great height?
I want someone else on this podcast to say that.
I have no problem with what Franklin did, but come out and say why you did it. If that's the reason, if you want an extra shutout on your resume for the college football playoff, that's fine. But don't come out and say, oh, our fourth team field goal block wasn't in, and I needed to call a timeout for that reason.
Gorney,
just come out and be honest.
Gorney, name the last time a college football coach was honest. Name it. I want to hear it. Are you looking at other jobs, coach? No. I love it here. I'm going to stay here forever. 2 weeks later, another job. Like, oh, God. I had a change of heart. They all lie. Everybody lies in this industry. It's what it is. So he's not going to come out and say, I wanted the shutout for the college football playoffs. He's going to lie, and that's his job. So lie, if you will, James Franklin. We'll move on. I don't mind it at all.
All right. Well, speaking of coaches and coaches lying, Mike, you put out an article also on Rivals.com this week about coaches that may be on the hot seat or close to it, I should say, under scrutiny. On that list was Kevin Sumlin, Butch Jones, Brian Kelly, Mike Riley, and Ed Orgeron. What kind of feedback are you getting on there? Do people think that list is fine, or are there other coaches that should be on that list?
No, I mean, and I think the guy, you know, I put him in order under scrutiny simply based on, you know, heading into the season and realistic chance of firing and all this other stuff. And I didn't put some other coaches on there that we know are going to be fired because they're not from big enough programs to really care about at this point in time. You know, I think Orgeron's probably under the most scrutiny. Some could say Butch Jones because of the way that game ended, and that would be a good argument. But I say Orgeron. I mean, the way they quit against Mississippi State, nobody really wanted this hire, or at least anybody who wanted this hire is now saying they didn't want this hire. And they're going to be watching to see if that offense gets any better. And the defense looked horrible, too. So now he's not on the hot seat. That's why I called it the scrutiny watch, you know, which doesn't have the same. There's no emoji.
Ring.
There's no emoji for scrutiny watch yet. I'm going to create it and make a lot of money. Just like Mason and the Multiples, which is really taken off, by the way, for Oklahoma State. I mean, that thing is – I'm getting calls from lawyers looking to trademark that thing every second. But scrutiny watch. So he's not going to get fired. He's in his first year, obviously, but he's under scrutiny. The guy who's on that list that is really kind of sliding under the radar, who will be on the radar again very quickly, is Brian Kelly, because they beat a bad Temple team and a bad Boston College team. They played tough with Georgia. You know, but that's a loss. Once they start mounting a few more losses, then he's going to be right on that scrutiny watch even more.
And it's really not just because, you know, of the on-field performance. It's just because, you know, of what he said this offseason about he didn't have a good team last year because he was fundraising too much. And after the Georgia loss, he kind of snaps and, you know, but I really think Orgeron, I think he's on the hot seat. I wouldn't say scrutiny watch, Mike. I'd move him right over
right
to
over
hot
to
seat
hot.
Because right over to hot.
Emoji.
you know, the way they played in that game was not good. They hired a new hot offensive coordinator, and they scored 7 points against Mississippi State. They didn't really blow BYU out. The offense doesn't look much different, really. They've tried some new things, and I know it's not going to happen immediately. But that it looks like you know, the kind of the same offense with a worse defense. Mississippi State blew them out. There were no changes made in that game. You know, Darius Geis is probably out for Syracuse this weekend, and so, you know, I think he was on a short leash. Not many coaches are on a short leash the second they're hired, and I think he was. And I think it's hot, but absolutely the hottest seat is Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M. You know, when Board of Regents are coming out on Facebook and deriding your coach and saying he should be fired now, that's not a good sign for him or for the program. You know, I think one more loss and people are going to snap. If they lose bad at Arkansas, it could be really bad and quick. They're talking about firing him mid-season and the positives and negatives of that. And so, you know, I think he is definitely up there. Butch Jones is up there. The SEC could have a little bit of an overhaul this year. You know, we're talking about a team, you know, a conference that hires and fires coaches. Jim McElwain took Florida to two SEC championship games, and people in Gainesville want him out. So there's a little bit of unrealistic expectations, and we're going to get into that, I think, a little bit about just how poor the SEC is after Alabama. And so, you know, my list of hot seat coaches would be Kevin Sumlin, Butch Jones, Ed Orgeron, and Brian Kelly in that order. I think, you know, if Brian Kelly continues to win, I know the schedule is rough. You know, going to Michigan State on Saturday could be a really telling game for what kind of team they have, because we don't know yet. You know, Georgia kind of shut them down, and then they blew out two bad teams. But those four guys definitely have to watch their backs.
Well, you mentioned it, Gorney. The SEC is down, and that is our next topic. You know, what's going on this year? It seems to be a lot of parity. Farrell, you want to talk about ranking the teams? I'll let you.
Yeah,
go
because
ahead.
People think it's easy. I don't know why I did it. Someone asked me a Twitter Tuesday question about it, and I decided to rank the teams. And I looked at it, and I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? This is awful. You know, it's like, okay, one, Alabama. And then I was like staring at a blank page, and I'm like, okay, two, Georgia. And then after that, I was lost. So there's just so many teams that are average, you know, and I think the Florida-Tennessee game was a good indicator of that, as though it's supposed to be, you know, two contenders in the SEC East, and I don't think either team looks very strong, you know, overall. They have many, many weaknesses. So ranking them in order was difficult for me. I can't remember the order I put them in. I remember people – I had Auburn, I think, fourth or something, and people freaked out about that, you know. But who else? Okay, so after Alabama and Georgia, give me the next two, Gorney.
Well, that's the thing. You know, this week, Florida goes to Kentucky, and a lot of people think Kentucky can win that game. Kentucky goes to South Carolina last weekend and beats South Carolina. A lot of people think Vandy could give Alabama game this week. A lot of people, you know, obviously watched Mississippi State pound LSU, and then they can go to Georgia this week and win. So I don't think it's a question of all of those teams are really talented. I think it's a question of all those teams minus Alabama are pretty average. There's no offensive explosion. There's a lot of unders being hit in this conference because defenses are good, but offenses are just really, really poor. Quarterback play is awful. And so, you know, you have a lot of talented defenses, but I don't know who the best, you know, after Alabama, is Mississippi State better than Georgia? We'll see this week. Is Kentucky this, you know, sleeper power? I don't think so. I mean, they struggled against Eastern Kentucky in week two, and I don't think they're that bad, but, there's just no offensive firepower in this conference. And there's a lot of good defenses, which leads to a lot of teams that just kind of look blah.
Which has been the way it's been for a while. You know, I mean, again, I think there's talented quarterbacks. I just think that the feeling in the SEC is if you have a quarterback that is talented, but, you know, he's not a superstar, and you've got a good running game and a strong defense, don't take any chances whatsoever. Just, you know, have that guy be a game manager for you. You know, Ole Miss is the exception here with Shea Patterson, who's putting up some crazy numbers. But, you know, don't let him make a mistake. You know, and then when you get into that mode, then you have low scoring games, which people find boring. I mean, listen, I thought the Clemson Auburn game was fun to watch because it was two very, very good defenses, but you don't have the offensive firepower. And then if you do fall behind, you really have nothing you can do. I mean, Danny Etling's not a good quarterback. Once LSU fell behind, they had 0% chance of coming back. Speaking of 0% chance, there's 0% chance Vanderbilt's going to give Alabama a game this weekend. I know Vanderbilt fans hate me. They think, you know, I hate them, blah, blah, blah. I hate everybody, so it doesn't matter. But I do not see any chance that Vanderbilt – what's the line? Do we even know the line?
18 and
all right,
a half.
I'd take Bama. Not that Bama's, like, offensively a juggernaut, But I think we're looking at a, I don't know, 34 to
28-7, 35-7 kind of game.
34-7 type of game. I mean, that Vanderbilt offense is really bad. So I think Alabama will take care of them.
Well, with that, do you want to jump in right now talking about upsets?
Yeah, that's fine. Here. I mean, let's take a look at the top 25. I'll give you my first one. Potential upset. Now, I'm not predicting this as an upset, all right? So let's not freak out.
All right, Mike, let's hear your prediction.
It's not a prediction. It's absolutely a potential game to watch is NC State and Florida State. NC State is a talented football team. They don't have a great team. By that, I mean they have some weaknesses at certain positions that can be exposed. Florida State's been off. They're starting a new quarterback. I think that could be a difficult game for Florida State when I look at the schedule.
You know, Mike in his old age is really starting to hedge his bets here. It's not hot seat.
No.
It's whatever you call it. It's not. I'm not calling it an upset. It's a potential, possible close game with.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The hot seat thing. The problem with the hot seat thing is these contracts. These freaking contracts. You can go like, I won't name the school, or the coach, but you can go 2-22 or whatever, your first 2 years and get a 5-year contract extension. You're not on any hot seat because they're not going to buy you out. They're not going to pay you out. So you could go 1-11 for the next 2 years and you're safe. But you should be on the hot seat. But you're not, because you're guaranteed to stay there at least 2 more years. So that's why the hot seat, I am very careful with that term, because I get skewered. And I'm not going to go out and say I'm stupid in predicting NC State to upset Florida State. They're a 2-touchdown dog. But if I'm a betting man, then I'm taking NC State. Now, that means everybody here should bet Florida State, because I'm always wrong on the spread. Always, 100%.
I think two potential upsets. One, obviously, Air Force beating San Diego State
this weekend.
Rocky Long does not lose to the academies. I'll just tell you that right now. So go ahead and put your money
on them from a great height, right?
If you want to call it an upset, Kentucky beating Florida straight up, I can see that happening in a 7-3 defensive battle in Lexington on Saturday. And then the game that a lot of people are picking and kind of like is Purdue taking out Michigan. I don't see it happening, but Purdue's offense can really score points, and Michigan has had problems putting points on the board. I think Michigan's defense just mauls Purdue. This is still Purdue, even though they took care of Missouri. But, I think that's a 10-point spread, and that's a juicy number if you're a betting man like
Mike.
Yeah,
like me. Purdue offense is going to be screaming for mercy from Don Brown and his gang of murderous defensive players who are going to just destroy them. Now, here's another one. Potential trap game. Penn State at Iowa. What say you?
You know, that is interesting. And for our lock of the week picks, I looked at the numbers, and I think about 70% of bets are on Penn State, and the numbers going in the opposite direction. So there's some smart money out there that's on Iowa. Playing Iowa at night, you know, ask Michigan about that. They lost there last year. Wadley is banged up. Butler, the other running back, is, I think, out. So, but Iowa can throw the ball this year. Their new quarterback, I think, has 10 touchdowns and one interception. If they can score points, Penn State's going to put up points. I don't think they're going to be able to stop the dynamic duo of McSorley and Barkley in the backfield. And, you know, he can throw the ball down the field. But playing in Iowa City at night is always a tricky place. It's always a tough game, and really, honestly, Penn State has not been tested this year at all. We know Pitt is garbage, and you know they just blew out Akron and Georgia State. So this is going to be the first road game of the year. It's going to be a tough night environment. I could definitely see a little disappointment in the Gorney household Saturday night.
I think Penn State will win, but not cover. I think it'll be a closer game than 13. I'm trying to see if I have the guts to predict a full out upset. And I don't think I do. I just don't see one here. As I scroll through, I just don't see anybody beating one of these top 25 teams outright. And we know.
What about Toledo beating Miami?
No.
Or what about Rutgers over Nebraska at home?
Oh, I'm not. No way. I would never say something like that.
That's not a top 25 game, Dave Barry. I mean, that's not even close to a top 25 game right there. That's called a Mike Riley survival game right there. If they lose to Rutgers, watch out. You know, and this is the thing. We're going to have, and Riley's not going to be one of them this year. It's not going to happen. But we're going to have a few coaches fired during the season. You already mentioned Sumlin. It's going to happen when I have plans to watch like a Homeland Marathon or go on some eating binge or something like that. Something.
So it can happen at any time, you're saying?
Something that brings me any slice of joy in my miserable life. That's when it's going to come down. And then it's going to be like text message after text message. Write this article. What do you think of this? These guys here, this. And I'm going to be like, I remember Urban Meyer decided to retired. What was it? Christmas Eve?
Yes, it was like a couple of days before Christmas because I was courting my wife at the time and I was at her house and I needed to work and she was impressed that I needed to, hit the phones and stuff, but I was certainly not impressed.
Well, she's not impressed anymore. So that's
no, those days are long gone.
I think it was Christmas Eve because I was in my footy pajamas getting ready to open my presents. And then I hear that Urban Meyer is retiring for health reasons. And the next thing I know, I'm writing like six different articles and calling every freaking recruit and trying to get Ronald Powell and Matt Elam, who hate every human being on earth, especially me, on the phone. And it was like, oh, Merry Christmas to me. And my wife went upstairs disgusted with me as usual. So that's going to happen. But if Rutgers loses, imagine if they lose to Rutgers. I mean, imagine if Nebraska loses to Rutgers, like not just Illinois, because Illinois is the following week. It's over. I mean, they're going to run them out of town. So, but I don't have the upset here. I guess the closest thing that I could say is NC State and Florida State. Watch out for that one.
All right. Well, gamblers out there, you now know what to do. Go ahead and put your money down and then let us know. How you do. You can tweet at Rivals Mike or at Adam Gorney. These guys will want to hear about all your misery after you giving them, or after them giving you the wrong pick. So with that, we'll get out of here. If we don't see a photo on a message board somewhere of Mike Farrell in footy pajamas, I'm going to be disappointed. So somebody out there,
opening
make it
presents
happen.
With right. Urban Meyer in a thought bubble. I mean, presents. You got to have Urban Meyer in a thought bubble. I'm opening presents and I'm
cup
sad. And I got footy pajamas. And, of course, I'm 500 pounds of obesity. That's got to be part of the avatar, the gif or whatever. So start creating main board, folks, because I'm coming.
All right. We'll be back with another edition of the Godfather and Gorney podcast here on Rivals.com next week. See you guys later.